Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
W.D. Wetherill, the author of 15 previous books, has recently published Soccer Dad, A Father, A Son, and A Magic Season. It was a cinch that I'd read the book. I like soccer, and for a time, I was a soccer dad. I even did a little coaching, though the less said about that, the better, at least as regards the records of the various teams I coached. Anyway, once I'd read Soccer Dad, it was easy to decide that it would be fun to talk to Walter Wetherill about the book. I began our conversation by asking him what had led him to write about his son's high school soccer team.
I've been watching my son or my daughter play soccer for almost 20 years now. I think if you let a writer look at anything for 20 years, he or she will write a book about it. So that's going on. I had a lot on my mind, lots of observation, lots of stories. I felt a certain missionary zeal here that soccer, American soccer, badly needs a book of celebration. The literature of soccer in America is really very thin. There are hundreds of books on baseball and football, but few really good ones on soccer, especially ones that celebrate how beautiful the game is.
The Hanover High School team has been exceptionally successful. Your son was on a team that won 3 consecutive state championships. Would you have been tempted to write about your son's experience and your own as a soccer dad if Hanover had been, say, a 500 team?
I think it's a book about happiness. And is it easier to be happy when you have an undefeated 20-0 team than it is when you go 10-10? I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that a little bit.
It seems to me the ultimate rhetorical question on a sports program.
Well, the good news is I'll never have to answer that.
Right. I don't want our listeners to get the impression that Soccer Dad is only about soccer games and players and coaches. Some of it is about driving to and from soccer games, and I particularly like your account of your trip home from a game at Oyster River last September. Could you read that for us?
All day the weather had been perfect, with the kind of burnished summer feel that makes you feel it will go on forever. A light southerly breeze that wafted monarch butterflies across the playing field. Wildflowers still in bloom, clumped and ready to pick bouquets. Fleecy clouds that look fresh off an impressionist easel. It mimics spring, this softness. It makes you want to laugh, dance, and sing. The realist in you, the Puritan doubter, is simply overwhelmed. But it's not spring. Your spirit is apt to feel wistful, and that's the heartbreaking part of early fall, knowing it's far too perfect to ever last. And it didn't last, not even through the rest of the afternoon. When we came to the rugged hills that separate central New Hampshire from our home in the west, the clouds, so soft in the morning, had darkened to the color of tarnished brass, and we could feel the temperature drop even inside the car. Celeste put the heat on, and it was clear that not only had real autumn arrived, our old-fashioned New England autumn that speaks of foliage, pumpkins, cider, and pilgrims. But an autumn had come with an undertone of winter, a winter of the spirit, that thing about fall that rests uneasily on the heart.
That's just one of the soccer occasions during which you were able to reflect on matters larger than the game. Is there something about soccer that encourages that?
There's something about the uninterrupted flow of soccer that is part of its magic. You can walk around it. You can take a stroll. You can walk down the line and look at it from a different direction. You can go off to the hot dog stand and come back and play continues. Part of that, I think, is what seems to add a certain metaphoric quality to it.
Lyrical writing aside, I have to ask you about some of the writing elsewhere in the book. At one point, you describe your reluctance to approach your son and his teammates right after a game that they've won, and you say you're in awe of the players and their, quote, legendary exploits. In retrospect, does that strike you as just a little over the top?
I don't think it is an exaggeration. That's certainly not the part about feeling a certain awe toward them. I'm not exactly sure where that comes from. Having watched them for so many years, I felt almost like I was watching Manchester United or Tottenham Hotspur or something. They did become larger than life. And I'm hoping the reader understands that I say that with my tongue partially in my mouth. The writing itself is an over-exaggeration, I suppose. But the feeling beneath it is not an exaggeration.
Early in Soccer Dad, you write that you and your son, Matt, had figured out that he would not play soccer in college since, as you put it, quote, the coach would own you and there would be too much else to do in college to want that to be the case. How did that line of reasoning change?
I think I spent so many years determined not to be a typical soccer dad or sports dad, convinced my son was going to be an All-American in college, that if anything, Matt and I went too far in the other direction, downplayed it too much. And as it turns out, one of the biggest surprises in the book is that by the end, Matthew is being recruited by some very good colleges and is playing now in college and having a very good time.
Well, it's good to hear. He's at Haverford College, I understand. And if there is a place where you can be an athlete and a scholar, perhaps that's the sort of place where it's possible.
That's right. And Haverford, actually, its first game was in, I believe, 1905. So soccer there, it's the oldest program in the country. Soccer there is almost as old as football is at a place like Harvard. And Matthew is a real student of the game, and he really values and understands the tradition of it. So, yeah, he's found the perfect place.
Part of what Soccer Dad is about is endings, the end of your son's career as a high school soccer player last fall, the end of his time living at home, and also the end of your days and nights as a soccer dad. You write that you're afraid you won't have much of a social life post-high school soccer. How has that worked out?
Oh, it's been terrible. This empty nest business has been absolutely excruciating. Certainly, I've watched all of Matthew's games since he was a little kid, and it was absolute agony not to have seen his first college game last week. I feel a lot like retired people are said to feel, that very mixed emotions, from a certain amount of relief to a certain amount of apprehension. But you're given a certain amount of parental fuel, I think, and you can't burn it forever. And that's what I'm dealing with right now, to come to an understanding that it was great while it lasted, but it's just not meant to last forever.
W.D. Wetherill, who has occasionally served as a commentator for Only a Game, is the author of over a dozen books, the most recent of which is Soccer Dad, A Father, A Son, and A Magic Season, published by Skyhorse Publishing. Walter, thank you very much for joining me.
That's great. Thank you very much, Bill.
My conversation with W.D. Wetherill will be featured in this week's program. I'll also be talking with Los Angeles sports writer Dylan Hernandez about the extraordinary stretch run the Dodgers have been making, and I'll revisit the Tampa Bay Rays, the team that's making fans forget that the American League East was once the sole property of the Yankees and the Red Sox. We'll also have a story about the trotters that are still trotting in Saratoga, thanks in part to casino gambling at their place of employment, and we'll go lawn bowling in Santa Monica. Kind of a coast-to-coast show this week. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.